This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame, so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hey, I'm Sarah Bivens.
And I'm Matthew Bivens.
And this is the Doing It at Home podcast. The only podcast dedicated to empowering, loving, and honest conversations around home birth. What started as a fun way for us to document our own home birth journey has turned into a platform for sharing birth stories, resources, and education with the goal of empowering mamas and families to make the birth decisions that work best for them.
Plus, we get into the antics, breakdowns, and breakthroughs of our own experience of marriage and parenthood.
All right, you ready, babe?
Yep, let's do it, mama.
Greetings, loved ones. Welcome back to Doing It at Home. It's Sarah here, my co-host Matthew. You will hear his voice in a few short moments here because I do the intros. Very rarely has Matthew done the intros. It's normally been in the type of circumstance where I've been ill or otherwise unable to record for some sort of reason, or maybe a super last minute, we need our intro. What do we do? Matthew, you do it kind of thing. So I normally do the intros. Here I am. That's what's up. That's what's going on. That's how we do it over here. That's how we do it at home. Again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for hitting that play button on whatever player, device, platform you are using. We're so grateful and we're so excited to have you here in this space, in this community. If this is your first episode, well, hot darn. Thank you. We're so happy. Whatever brought you here, whomever, thank you to that person or space or platform, whatever it was. And if you've been with us from the beginning, from back in 2016, and this is episode 300, whatever we're in now for you, you're amazing. You're all amazing. So if you have not subscribed yet, though, you very possibly could have listened to all of our episodes and not yet be subscribed. It's funny how that can happen. So go ahead and hit that subscribe button so that you get notified of every single episode when it comes out. And then it's also helpful on our end, you know, algorithmically and how all that fancy stuff works to get the show out there and to grow the space more. So just go ahead and hit that subscribe button if you would be so kind. And a review is greatly appreciated as well. You can drop that in Apple Podcasts. That's probably the most common way to do it. But if you don't use Apple to listen to the podcast, you can still leave a review through Podchaser, and there's a link to that in the show notes there for you. So just go ahead and look at the description of today's episode. You'll see the link there and you can drop that in there. Again, just really helpful for us for getting the show out there and growing the space and the community. So really appreciate it if you just take a moment to do that. If you've gotten anything out of the show and you want to pay it forward, that's a way you can do that. You can also be following us on all of our social channels. So we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, and our private Facebook group is where it's at, if I do say so myself. We are 1,000+ members strong now and just growing daily, and so many rich conversations going on in there, so many great questions being answered, resources being shared. It's just truly magical. So if you want to be a part of the conversation more, if you want to dive further into the doing it at home experience, if you want to learn more about home birth, hear more experiences, connect with us more one-on-one, the Facebook group is the best place to do that right now. So go to the link in the show notes for that, or you can just search in Facebook, the Doing It at Home Birth group. And I cannot give the announcements without mentioning the swag shop, the Doing It at Home gear, Have Babies Where You Make Them, birth magic, gifts and gear for your doula and or midwife or members of your birth team, fellow birth junkies, unite and rep your home birth pride with a Let's Talk Home Birth or Doing It at Home. You know, there's so many great options there for you, ranging from mugs to tote bags to shirts, tanks, sweatshirts, hoodies, whatever weather you are in right now, because precursor to today's conversation, you could be in a different hemisphere from us, so it could be hot where you are right now. It is super cold where we are currently in Atlanta. So anyway, all types of weather, we've got it for you. So that link is in the show notes as well. Okay, I'm complete with that. Let's talk about today's birth story. So it's a really great topic, and I think it's going to hit home exactly for certain people who might be thinking about having a birth experience like this or who have just been curious. I think this is going to appeal to so many of you for so many reasons. What could it be like, or was it like, if you had this experience, or what could it be like if you're thinking about having this experience of birthing outside your native country? So it'd be understandable, right, to have some potential fears and or reservations in birthing in a country different from what you're used to or where you were born or where you saw other people give birth. But what if it could be uncomplicated, supported, and without fear? Our guest today is Amy Brown, and Amy traveled from Chicago, Illinois to Peru back in 2011 to work as a teacher, and she hasn't left since. So she met her now husband, Marco, there and has set up life in Lima, Peru, and she's given birth to both of her children there, her daughter, Leah, and her son, Christopher, in a birthing center in the city. And so Amy walks us through her journey of desiring natural births without intervention to selecting the birth center, which, by the way, is run by a German doctor now living in Peru. And she worked with a doula from England. So this is a very international birth experience. It's really cool. And then preparing for the birth experience with her husband, Marco. And so we talk about some of the birthing options and trends in her area where cesarean rates are actually particularly high. So we talk about that. And then we get to hear details from both of her birth stories, which took place, again, in that birth center, Casa Pacari, in Lima, Peru. And already kind of set it up to where this is a very international birth experience. So that is one of the main topics and highlights. We also talk about husband/partner being a very active participant in the birth process. We talk about the different options and birthing trends and kind of culture in Lima, Peru. And we also talk about this cool placenta ceremony, El Pago a la Tierra, and water birth. So those are some keywords and phrases for you to be aware of and look out for within the story. It was such a great conversation. Thank you to Amy. And quick word from our sponsor, and we'll dive right in.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Amy, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Living it up right now with some sun in Peru.
We can send some of that sun our way.
We will take it.
We got some cold, rainy weather up here, but other than that, we are really, really excited to have you on the show today. So thanks for joining us, Amy.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, that whole hemisphere differentiation thing, like I have to remind myself of that when I'm doing intros for the show and stuff. And I'm like, oh, it's getting cold here, guys. Or I'm like, oh, it's warming up. I'm like, that's not the case in another half of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your family. Then you already mentioned you're in Peru. So I'm sure we'll get into some of the timeline of that and the journey of that. But yeah, just share with us, you know, who all is down there and what y'all are up to.
Yeah, well, I am married to a Peruvian. His name's Marco, and we met in 2011 in Cusco, Peru, when I was living there and teaching, and he was stationed there because he's an officer in the Peruvian Army. So we met when I was teaching, and he was a student of mine. And today we have two children, one's six, one is three, and also my stepson lives with us as well. And he's 18, almost 18. So we have a full house.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Wow. That's so cool. And so when did you, have you stayed there since 2011, or was there any sort of back and forth since then? Wow. So you've just been there since then.
Yeah. I graduated university in 2009, spent a year working, saving up some money, living with my mom. And then, and I was actually an adventure trip guide for a YMCA camp, in the summers. I'd been going there since I was a kid, and I was like, I'm going to do my last hurrah, my last summer. And I led a whole bunch of trips, and then I'm going to head to Peru. So,
wow.
To do the Inca Trail and find a job teaching English. And that's what I did. It was basically, I wanted to try and do some, get some teaching in, get some real world experience before deciding if I was going to do a master's program or anything like that. And yeah. And then I was always open to opportunity, and nothing was ever like set in stone. So, you know, I went with it and ended up staying here since summer of 2010 is when I arrived in Peru.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
It's really inspiring.
Oh, why Peru? What drew you there?
I actually studied abroad in Ecuador and loved being in the mountains, the Andes Mountains. And I figured, you know, I might as well try something new. I wanted to do the Inca Trail, really into backpacking, outdoor stuff. So I went for it, and I knew no one in Peru, absolutely no one. I was totally like, all right, I'm going to find somebody on, you know, maybe some expats on Facebook. And that's what I did, and worked out really well. I stayed with a guy who ended up joining a band of his in Cusco.
Oh my gosh.
That's cool.
Amy.
It was quite an adventure. It's been just taking one opportunity after the other. That's my kind of my mantra, is like, always be open to opportunity, because you never know when when it might take you somewhere.
Yeah.
Totally unexpected and wonderful. So
very cool.
And do you come from a family of adventurers? Like, is this kind of par?
No.
Okay. So, all right.
No, I, you know, we, our trips were always, car trips around the United States. Like, I've visited all the lower 48, throughout my childhood. And so I appreciate that sense of adventure, at least getting out and, you know, seeing the surroundings of the United States, now my home country. And, but no, in general, my mom was actually, she was like, I actually kind of live vicariously through you, because I was always too afraid to travel and get out there and do stuff. So I'm really happy that you're doing this.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So, but always very supported.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were,
that's great.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that, because I was thinking about, like, I, you know, think about yourself when you hear stories like that. And I'm like, oh, my whole family probably would have freaked out.
Yeah, they probably would have.
Yeah, Bivens is acknowledging.
Yes.
But I just think that's so cool. Oh, my gosh. And so are you a bilingual household?
Yes, we are. And it's since the pandemic has started, my kids actually, their first language was Spanish.
Beautiful.
But now it's totally changed to being English, because they've been home with me all year long this past year. And so they're more comfortable with English now than they are with Spanish. But that's okay, because we live in a majority Spanish country. So I'm not worried. It actually makes me, it's kind of relieving, because it's one of the things where I was like, okay, I gotta make sure they have enough English and getting that in, which, so
that's great. I'm sure it'll fluctuate too, you know, depending on their friends and everything over the years, but that's so cool. And then this is just all my personal curiosity. I'm like, I have all these questions.
Are different interview now.
Is there dual citizenship? Like, how is that? Okay. Cool.
I became a citizen in 2019.
Congrats.
Thanks.
That's cool.
Yeah. Makes life a lot easier in a lot of ways.
I'm sure. Okay, we'll have to talk more offline. I'll save the rest of my questions. People are like, let's get to the birth, Sarah. Come on. We know, like, you want to go live abroad.
Well, I'm over here looking up images of Lima, because I didn't.
That's
I
what he does. He looks up where everyone lives every time we talk to someone.
I
so
love it.
He's doing his thing and I'm doing mine.
It looks beautiful.
So let's go back in time then. to you and Marco are together, and were you planning for a family, or is it something that just kind of came up along the way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely. We talked about kids. He already had a child when, mm-hmm. when we met. He was 8 years old at the time, but not living with him. He was with his mom. And so, you know, my husband actually was very much, when we met, they just separated. So he was very much like, I don't know if I really want to have a family again. Like that wasn't what he was looking for in the beginning, you know, but as our relationship evolved, he was like, no, it was clear to me that I, you know, would like to have a relationship and possibly get married and have kids. And it was all on the table again. So for him, I'm very grateful mm-hmm. that he was into that. So yeah, we dated for a year and a half and then got married in 2012 in Cusco, just by ourselves, like with witnesses. Mm-hmm. And that was it. No family, for our civil wedding. Mm-hmm. And then the following year, when we moved to Lima from Cusco, we moved to Lima in 2013. And that's when we had our big religious wedding, mm-hmm. and people came from the United States, and yeah, it was a big party.
Oh, that's great. That's magical. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then when babies came into the picture, mm-hmm. what were those conversations like as far as planning for birth? And I kind of want to paint a picture here of not only what you were thinking personally, what you wanted to experience, but then I also want to get into, you know, what were your options there, and what mm-hmm. did that look like?
Yeah. I wanted to have some time. I'm glad we had a good year of, after we moved, cause it's always important to have time before, I would say for sure, at least a year after you get married, mm-hmm. to like get used to what it is to be married and all get all that like kind of worked out, because
yeah.
sometimes you have, you know, preconceived notions of what you need to be doing or this and that. It's just like working on the relationship, making sure that's all solid before you go into having kids, because that definitely is a huge game changer. So we had been married 2 years actually, right? Because we got married in 2012 and then we had 2013 to get used to being in a new city and all of what that entailed. And so then in 2014, in March, I was like, all right, like ready to go, because we planned it out because I got a job teaching, and the school year here is through till December, because our summer is from December through right. March. So I was like, okay, well, let's see if we can work this out, get pregnant. So I take advantage of my summer vacation. You get 3 months maternity leave here. Paid maternity.
Nice.
So I was like, okay. And I wanted to try and give, you know, everything I could to the school as far as teaching. It was my first year. I wanted to give a good impression, everything. I get pregnant the first year. And it worked out perfectly. I've been super fortunate because, both of my kids were completely planned, and it was like right on the first try. It was like, okay, we're going to go for it. Boom. Mm. I was pregnant. Which, you know, is not the case for many people. So, and then after I got pregnant, I don't know, I was never in doubt that I couldn't have a natural birth, or like that there would be complications. I think it was just this, like, I just put it in my head as like, I'm going to do this. My body knows what to do. I'm going to, and it's interesting because my mom had two C-sections. Okay. I was a big baby. I got stuck. So, she had to have an emergency C-section with me, because my brother, who's older than me, she had to have a C-section with him because of breaching, and then she tried to have VBAC with me, but I was just too big. My head was too big. So, looking at her, if I had been just basing on my mom's experience, I would have been a little like, oh no, like, am I going to be able to do this?
Sure.
But no, I guess I was just like, no, I'm going to be able to do this. And I also, remember watching the film by Ricky Lake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people have referred to that. But I watched that and I was like, yeah, okay, yeah. Like, I'm going to do this. Like, so I looked into what options I had here. And there is a national health system here, and there's private clinics. And then what I went with was a private birthing center, which is literally just a house.
Okay.
No, wow. They're like the most intervention there was like, maybe if you had brought a little like oxygen tanker, if you want, like if you brought, you know, like there was no, it was literally in a house. Mm-hmm. And I was so certain that everything was going to be fine that I opted, my backup plan for my first birth for Leah was to use the national health system. And now afterwards I looked more into it, and I found out that like if I had had complications and had to go to the emergency room or do it through the national system, I would have been put into like a room with other mothers in labor, like full like conjoined rooms. Like there's no like separate delivery rooms or anything like that. It's like everyone is all together.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, which is like intense when you think of it. Like, oh my goodness. Like yeah. I guess on the one hand it could be helpful because you're in it with other people, but on the other hand it's like you could be seeing other people like really going through whatever, you know.
Yeah,
it's like that.
Yeah.
A lot of energy.
Yeah. So yeah. So I was like, okay, well I'm really glad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So the next time around with my son, I was like, okay. And I also got private insurance. I didn't have private insurance at that time. Mm. So I had gotten private insurance with my son through my work.
Okay.
And had a private clinic as a backup for the second time around. But the second time I was like even more sure. I was like, this will be, I got this. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. And is that birthing center, is it pretty popular? You know, is it, if you could kind of get a feel for what women and families are choosing in your area, what is, what do you see the most?
I would say it's not very popular. It is very much like the, like, you know, people look, it's like, this is like the hippy dippy, like, you know, a crunchy, like, you're going to go, because it's very, very minimal. Like, it's run by a German doctor. She's been in Peru for over 40 years. She's got her license here. She was married to Peruvian. She's brought, you know, raised her kids here. She's not actually an obstetrician. She's a general medical doctor, like but she, you know, has plenty of experience. Like since she started the birthing center, in the early 90s, I believe it was. And it's been going ever since. It's called Casa Pacari. And I've sent a link, so if people are interested in looking, they have pacarii.com.
Okay.
Pacari. And yeah, and they, you know, offer prophylaxis classes, and it's very much, you know, taking, she takes a lot of things from like the Andean culture as well, from Peru. And the idea, because like, you know, in the, you go out into the mountains, people aren't going to be going to the hospitals giving birth. And like, there's all, they've also have traditions and things as well. Even, with the placenta, for example, afterwards, I participated in a placenta ceremony, like a burial, like it's kind of, there's something here called the pago a la tierra, which is like a payment to the earth. And they do it for various things. Like usually for, they'll ask for like, you know, wealth or a good crop or, you know, things like that. And one of the things you can do is like, after you give birth, you offer the placenta to the earth, right? Like, so I participated in that as well, in the center, and they did it in the garden. So, oh, excellent.
So who is that?
This is my son.
Oh,
okay. Very excited about his I'm sure what he his game that he was playing.
Okay.
Oh, that's Christopher.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Christopher.
What's up, Christopher?
So yeah.
Okay. So not so popular. And that's so interesting. I mean, there's so many parts of that are really cool. I mean, one, just the whole international collection there, you know, German practitioner in Peru, and you know, you expat, your husband Peruvian, like that's, I'm so excited to hear that whole setup as we get into the birthing details. But that's beautiful that it still is there and operating, even with, like you mentioned, not being so popular. And help me, Lima, is it very urban? Like, what kind of, how could you kind of compare it city-wise?
It's, I mean, it's a cement jungle for
sure.
and yes, we have the ocean and the beaches, but in general, it's very dense. And the majority of people will, at least in the area where I'm around, like people will mostly give birth at the clinics. Mm-hmm. If people have the opportunity, they'll do it through a private clinic as opposed to going through the national hospitals. But something interesting here too is that it is the C-section rate here and scheduled C-section rates have just like gone up and up. Like it's a since the I believe I was looking at a study, it was like since like the early 90s. And so this is definitely the alternative to using Pacari was the first you're going to go first natural birth. And like, it, obviously you have to have a backup plan. There's, she will not accept you if you don't have a backup plan, should there be a complication. Because it's, you know, it's a, she'd be, there'd be a lot of issues, legal issues too, as well.
Sure.
But yeah, it's like in the private clinic, it's up to like 80% of C-sections in some of the clinics because, people either schedule them or the doctor schedule them or whatever. It's just like, it's kind of crazy looking at the statistics of it. But in general, it's about 30% C-section in Peru overall.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, okay. Yeah.
Thank you. That's helpful, you know, just to get some context for the space that you're in. And I mean, even in the U.S., you see so much shift around from state to state, you know, whether it's the rates and the statistics or the care provider options or whatnot.
I just looked it up. In the U.S. is about 32%, it says, in 2017.
Yeah, across the board. Which
so it's pretty similar to Peru.
I'm also curious how crunchy or like hippie is described in Spanish. I'm curious what those words are.
Oh, you know what? They actually use hippie as well.
Okay.
Like I've heard that as well. It's like, yeah, natural.
That's okay.
La mamá más natural. And that's actually something, there is definitely a rise in interest in more like healthy living and that you'll find more bodegas that have like, you know, supplements and like trying to promote a more healthy lifestyle and with the superfoods. And obviously Peru has all of these foods. Like we produce quinoa and kiwicha and amaranth and amaranth is kiwicha. And so we've got, that's something that's actually really wonderful here is that we have all that access to really good, healthy food.
Sure.
Right here. So you don't have to worry about importing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat.
I'm curious. So what were the conversations like with Marco around what you were feeling for the birth?
He said he was like, at first he was like, oh, really? Like you want to do this? Like without going to the, he was totally surprised by, he was not into it. But then he told me, he was like, as soon as I saw how confident you were about it, thought, okay, well, if she's really confident and thinks that this is going to work out, then who am I to be worried about it? Mm. So he went right along and came to the prophylaxis classes and worked it out because I was like, he is going to be there with me. He is going to help me out. Like, I want him to be fully involved in this birth process. And so he was all for it and, especially excited too, because he wasn't able to be at the birth of his son.
Okay.
So he was very much like, I want to be there. I want to be there to see, to welcome my children and my child now. And actually he was right there because the first birth was a water birth. Mm. So he was right there behind me holding on through all of it.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's cool. Very cool.
Well, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we can talk birthday details.
Great.
Okay, so your first birth with Leah in the birthing center, kind of give us some of the highlights of that experience going into it and the action.
Yeah. Well, I started getting contractions in the evening, evening, and I was kind of rolling with them. I was like, okay, definitely feeling like contractions. And as soon as they started getting closer together, I decided, okay, it's probably a good idea to give a call and head to the birthing center. And when we got there, I was still only like 3 centimeters dilated. And they say, you know, you could go home, try and get some rest, and let us know if it gets harder, they're more intense, or and we'll come back. So it's like, okay, since it's your first birth, it usually doesn't progress super fast, so you've got some time. So I went home, tried to get some sleep. I tried one contraction laying down on the bed, and that was the only contraction that I withstood lying down. After that, I was like, I tried a rocking chair and worked my way through it, most of them, until the point where I was like, this is unbearable. Like, we need to go. And so we got to the birthing center probably around 10:30 at night. And then I spent the entire night on my knees, like in prayer position on the bed, or like next to the bed. And my doula, I had a doula who actually, she's from England, but she was in Peru, and she was working with the Casa Pacari at the time. And she was there to help me through. And so I slept in between contractions. I really don't like, it went by pretty quickly, because I was so exhausted. And then I'd get through a contraction and just put my head down and sleep. And then finally around 7 in the morning, they said, okay, you're good. You can get into the water now. You're far enough along. So I get into the water and I spent about 2 hours pushing. Finally she came out. I do remember one of the most wonderful things about, being in the water and everything, it was the initial getting into the water, of just that relaxation of, oh, it feels so good. It was like a wonderful feeling. And then, the way it was set up is that the bathtub, it was big jacuzzi style. And then on the top, there's a blanket that was tied around a big beam at the top. So you can hold onto the blanket to hold yourself up. And get some support there, because obviously when you're really trying to push, if you want to be standing, I was more or less, squatting when she finally, came out.
Squatting and, in the tub?
Yeah, in the tub. So I had the floating, I was able to float a little bit with the water. So it was less work. And obviously my husband was also helping me, you know, holding me up a little bit as well, cause I was exhausted, of course. Yeah. But what I was saying, one of the most wonderful things is that my doula was there with a fan, like she was fanning me in, and they gave me fruit in between the, you know, pushing. So I was like, to relax. And they gave me pear and mandarin orange. And I just was like, I was sitting there, I was like, this is how everyone should give birth.
Wow.
It was just like, I felt like such a queen. Like they were just treating, like it was great. It was really great. I had the support behind me from my husband, who was in the tub with me. I was, you know, my doula was there fanning me, giving me food. My midwife, Dr. Angela, she was there in front of me, just, you know, helping me along, you know, making sure everything was good. It was great. It was really great. So that was, and then afterwards, they immediately got me out. They cut the cord, and fortunately the placenta came out pretty quickly afterwards. And then they wiped me down, and put me in bed, like just had me lay down right away, got me in bed, and then brought, my daughter out and put her on me. And I spent like 2 hours just letting her, trying to nurse and, just get, you know, contact, just kind of relaxing, and both of us napping after the birth. And then after that, you know, they came in, checked me out. They had to do some stitching for me, which actually was probably worse than the birth itself.
Right.
that's the they gave me some topical cream, but I actually had to do like breathing techniques during that process. Cause I was like, this is worse. Ooh, I need to breathe. Like, so then they weighed her and, got her dressed and everything and, made sure she was healthy and yeah, that was it. There's no blood work. There's nothing else done. There was just no, vaccines, nothing, right away. It's really just giving birth at home. And then you go along and you take your time. I could have stayed longer if I wanted to. I was like, no, I think we can go. We can head home.
So when did you go home? Like a couple hours later?
I went home at, let's see, I gave birth at 9 in the morning and I went home at 3 in the afternoon.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like we're complete here.
Yeah. Everyone good? Everyone good? Cool. That's so cool.
So real quick, those in attendance for the first birth was midwife, doula, husband?
Yep.
Got it. Wow. And then
I think there might have been an obstetrician too at one point. I think another doula came in. I remember at one point I had two doulas, one on each arm, just like soothing me. But I was also in and out of sleeping. And
Wow. And that setup sounds pretty great with the beam and the... Mm-hmm. You know, the towel above that you could support yourself and hold on to.
Unfortunately, I don't have any pictures of the actual, like the water birth or even like the bathroom or how to set up everything. Cause we were all just in it. No one was like, and I was not thinking like, take a picture of this. Or like, I don't know. I did send you guys a picture of the room though, where, at the bedroom, and there's a support as well in there with some, a blanket that's hanging. You can do it there. And actually my son, he was born in the bedroom. We didn't get into the tub. He was going to be a water birth too, but he wanted to come a lot faster.
Gotcha. Yeah. And we're going to share those pictures so that people can see and get a visual with this story. And I'm curious, you know, you mentioned doula. I think that's so awesome. How common are doulas in that space and even in the hospitals, in the birthing center? Like what's that culture kind of like?
Not super popular.
Got it.
It's grown in popularity.
Okay.
For sure. And you can find stuff like, if you look up doulas in Lima, there's, a lot of people who are offering those services, but, no, it's, very much like go in your obstetrician, like, I feel like it's a little cold still, the treatment, and obviously in the outside of the Lima area and you get more into the country, like, you know, people there still are definitely still giving birth at home. They do go to the hospitals, but even there, they still promote trying to, I remember being in a hospital in Cusco in 2010, 11. And I remember seeing a statistic on there, like 70% of the mothers here give birth standing up. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, just trying to promote that. So they're very much still, they're not, I feel like outside of the city areas, it's still very much like, trying to promote natural births and doing that less intervention. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So, mm-hmm.
Okay. So then let's go into birth number two with Christopher.
Yeah. So he was much faster. Second births tend to be. and with him, my water broke as well, which my water didn't break with. My water didn't break with Leah. And it's funny because it happened, and I was like, I think my water broke, because it's not, you know, it's not always like the movies where it's like a big huge mess. It's just, it was like, okay, I think I kind of peed myself, but nope. And checked it out, and I was like, well, I'm not having contractions, so I'm just gonna go back to bed, because it was like 3 a.m. So I went back to bed, and then around 7, I woke up and I did, and then the contractions started. And they progressed pretty well. And by the time, by 10 o'clock in the morning, I was like, we should go. Like, this is getting closer together, getting harder, they're getting more intense. So we headed over, and my midwife was out of town. So the obstetrician who works with her and takes over when she's not there, she was there to help out. And it didn't bother me though. I was like, I was still very much like, this will be fine. Like, even cause you know, from the first time around, I was like, this time will be good. Mm. And, so we got there and I put on some reggae music, and that was kind of what I would go through the contractions and just kind of dance through with the contractions with the reggae music. It was good, and my husband would just massage my lower back and be there to help me through them, and I'd hold on to him past the contraction and then keep going. And it was interesting because it was a daytime as opposed to nighttime that my daughter, I was doing all the contractions at night. So I was going through these contractions and I was like, wow, I'm really tired right now. No wonder I was sleeping in between those contractions at night. And I, you know, we were going through it and I was like, okay, I think it was progressing pretty well. And they came in probably around 1:30 or so, and they checked me. They're like, okay, you've got a few more centimeters to go, but we'll start getting the water ready for the bath. And then I had another contraction and I literally felt his head drop into position.
Wow.
And it was like one long contraction that held on to my husband. I was standing up and I was like, oh, this is good. It was like, I feel it. And it just kept going. There were at one point like three women. Because there were other people there too. And there were three women who came in because I felt like, I feel him coming. Like, mm-hmm. And I didn't have to push at all. I told myself too, this time, I was like, I'm not going to push. Cause I spent too much time, like almost like exploding my head, pushing with my daughter. And I realized, like, I don't need to do that. My body will do this. So I just let my body do the work and was not in my head at all. And he just came out in more or less one contraction.
Oh my goodness.
And it was, they had this little half moon, a crescent moon seat, to be able to sit in to give birth sitting. And so he came out, they grabbed him, and then I sat down on this seat because they let the placenta, the blood flow, get all of that out. So he got all that. And then cut the cord and the placenta came out like right away. Mm. It was just boom, boom, boom. And I at that point I was just kind of crying. I was like, this was so fast.
Oh, wow.
So, it was so fast. And my husband too was just like, whoa, like that was really fast. So, it was both. And I had to get some stitches the second time around. It was not nearly as bad. And I told him, I was like, please do it right away while my adrenaline is still going.
Oh yeah.
Like,
I got this. Let's go.
Do not wait. Because the last time I waited 2 hours to do it. No, it was a bad idea. So I was like, just get it done right away. So, and same thing. We just got to hang out and lie down and sleep and then do all of the weighing and everything, checking him afterwards, after we had gotten some rest.
Wow.
And it was wonderful. And then I asked my husband, I was like, please go get me some chicken soup. that's all I want. And then I got soup and they had more fruit and just, you know, they were bringing in food for me. It was great. It was literally, I just wish this upon all women, like having such calm atmosphere and people that are there to help and just trusting in their bodies now that they can do it.
That's so beautiful
story. Yeah,
and I love that you're open to sharing that and putting that out there and holding that space and possibility for other women and families, you know. And I would call your story and aspects of it pretty normal and uncomplicated. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, I feel like I had easy pregnancies in general too. Like I had the typical tiredness and everything like that, but I had no other complications. Mm-hmm. I worked right up till 2 days before, 3 days before I gave birth to my daughter. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to take maternity leave, but now after that, my son, I had to take maternity leave starting 2 weeks before the projected birth date, which is fine. I was like, no, this is totally fine. We're good to go. I'm like, you know, I'm also very much like, do not go into any, don't go into birth without having your backup plan, because you never know what's going to happen. It's, you can be super confident as well. Like there's, I don't want to, you know, downplay when people that you shouldn't be thinking about the other option. I think you should be confident in your body, but also making sure that you're ready for anything should there be any issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
All the perspectives, all the stories are so important and matter, you know, and particularly ones, and that's why, you know, wanted to confirm with you that you would consider it normal and uncomplicated, because at times those are the stories that people are afraid to share. And I know when we were going through our, you know, home birth journey and then sharing our birth story, that was something I had to get within myself to share and to be able to say, like, my birth was magical, my birth was amazing, because I think there's a fear around sharing that, whether, you know, how that mm-hmm. might impact other people, or that it's breaking up this narrative that we have around birth being scary and fear-based mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So, you know, if you had a birth experience and you relate to it as traumatic, that's an important story to tell. And if you had a birth that was normal, uncomplicated, and you loved your birth, that's an important story to tell too.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I think we can often get stuck in like the thing of like, oh no, I don't want to make anyone else feel bad, or like, sure. you know, because of that. But you know, it's, everyone has their own experience. It's not about like making anyone feel bad or guilty or mm-hmm. ashamed or anything of how their birth went, their yeah. birth stories go, because, you know, everyone is different.
Yes.
Everyone is valid too. All of their,
yeah, absolutely.
Their stories are valid. So,
yes.
Yeah.
I know for myself, before we had Maya, mm-hmm. being able to see different depictions of birth created a new quote unquote normal for me, mm-hmm. or at least it created a different ideas in my mind of what was possible. Because, you know, we've shared it a lot on the podcast that so much of, for me specifically, but I think a lot of people can relate to this, so much of what I picked up on was just what you see in movies and TVs.
For sure.
And the stories that you hear. And so to be able mm-hmm. to hear other stories, stories where birth went as planned, stories where it didn't go as planned, yeah. where, you know, the birthing person was very vocal mm-hmm. and where they weren't vocal, just to mm-hmm. just to understand that there is an entire spectrum.
Yeah.
And so I think all of those stories are important to share. Yeah.
That's why we're
and
here.
And along those lines, I actually made sure to tell my story a lot to like my colleagues and to other
great.
People. And I wrote about it on my blog as well. And because I think especially for expat women, like people can be very worried about a different country, a different
Definitely.
System, different like all this stuff. And I just remember feeling like, you know, no, it's fine. We got this. Like, you can do this. Like, you know, and sharing that story that no, you can, they can be good. Like, you don't have to focus on all of these like negative things that positive, this doctor did this or this and that, and all this, you know, it's so easy to go the negative route and just be so anxious about all the things that could go wrong
yeah.
that when, so I really tried to put in there, especially for people who are like, I don't know, like, yeah, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Just be confident in yourself. Like, you can do this. I tried to promote that, because you are absolutely correct. I think we definitely go for the more, you know, outrageous, like scary, like situations of this and that. And that's what gets people, I think, a lot of times too, here is that the not trusting in your body. And then so many people go the route of a lot of people even schedule their C-sections because they don't even want to deal with like
sure.
the pain and like all this stuff. And it's just like, you know, their bodies are made for this. We can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
How was, to circle back to wrapping up your birth stories for a moment, how mm-hmm. was Leah meeting Christopher? How was that moment for the family?
Oh, it was good. She was sweet. She, you know, gave him a little caress, and she was almost three at that point. And then she, and a little while later, she read him a book.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's always, and they have a very, very good relationship. And especially now, since we've spent a whole year inside together, more or less, they are best friends now. So,
that's great.
Yeah. And they're at the age now too, where they can really play with each other. 3.5 and 6. It's like they play pretend very well.
That's awesome. Go you, mama.
That's really
Hence
great.
You being able to have this conversation with us now for like 45 minutes.
yeah. yeah.
Evidence of that.
It also helps to have a stepson who can watch them and if they need anything.
There you go.
yeah.
I'm curious too, in closing here, you mentioned Business of Being Born. Are there any other resources or things that were helpful for you in your process and journey that we could potentially share with listeners?
Well, I did Mama Natural, which I know you've had on, and that's actually how I found you guys, was a really good resource as well. I watched all of the in real life videos that Genevieve put up.
Great.
So I followed those and that was really the extent of it. I didn't do too much too much researching. I kind of was on the side of like, I don't need to like go into like everything that could possibly happen and this and that. Like I'd never read What to Expect When You're Expecting. I never did like enough of that. I was like, I would look up something if maybe something came up. I'd be like, is this normal or whatever? But other than that, I just was kind of like, as long as I'm feeling good, I don't need to be going down the rabbit hole of
I get it.
The internet about stuff,
I think so, that's great. And there's someone listening right now who can be like, cool, there's other people like that out there, because I was kind of feeling that way and I was kind of getting on myself because I don't want to read, you know, a bunch of, you know, medical journals and textbooks, and I don't want to listen to a million podcasts. I mean, besides doing it at home, listen to all of Doing It at Home.
Right.
But I don't want to listen to anything else. Like, because there are those people. I can kind of relate to that because I kind of have that mind where if I'm feeling a certain way, if I'm in an emotional, mental space about something, you know, of course I want to know a couple of things that can just ground me in the knowledge, but I don't really need to do a whole lot more. So I like that you say that, because just like there's that spectrum of birth, there's the spectrum of your personality as a birthing person and what's going to serve you best to feel most confident in your birth. And for some, that is diving into the research. And for some, that's not even touching it. So I thank you for saying that, because I know right now there's someone feeling validated because they were kind of feeling that way and maybe, you know, had some thoughts about that or some judgment come up or whatever. So that's awesome. Amy, you're amazing.
Yes, you
are. Thank you so much for being with us all the way from Lima, Peru. Gosh, I just love how this space connects us all over the world with people around birth. It's just, it's so cool. So on so many levels, I feel like your story hits on a lot of things that someone can get something out of, you know, even if they are in the U.S. or might be planning to live outside of the U.S. Like, I think there's so much, so many juicy things in this. So thank you. Thank your family for being a part of this as well. Shout out to Christopher again for making a little cameo.
Yes. Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you, Sarah, Matthew. Thank you very much. And I appreciate that you guys are dedicating your time and energy to this, to promote birth, natural birth, and to promote, like I said, empowering women and feeling strong in their decision to be in charge of their birth plan and what they want to do with their bodies. So fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved, Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.